Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
City News.
It's 17:30 GMT. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 City FM. I am Umaru Sanda Amadu. Tonight, I'm here with
Hawa Idrisu Mustafa.
And coming up over the next 90 minutes.
I would like you all to know that the medical assessment on the child, it indicates that she's not pregnant and she has no immediate health concerns. Thus, the child will be reunited with her family today, 18th April 2024, after the parents have signed a bond.
Bobu Wulomo's 15-year-old wife to be returned to the family today following Attorney General's advice, which also said a pregnancy test on the girl proved negative. Also coming up, government's newly imported train involved in an accident on the first test ride on the Tema Akosombo line. And later on Eyewitness News, National Association of Graduate Teachers, NAGRAT, gives government a one-week ultimatum to settle one-year-long Tier 2 pension arrears or face the wrath of organized labor. And later on Point Blank, my guest is former Deputy Attorney General and former MP for Timpani, Joseph Penka. But before then, there will be business news in some 15 minutes from now. Hawa has the latest headline.
Government reiterates commitment to implement more reforms to ensure stability within energy sector.
That's in 15 minutes from the City Business Desk. Eyewitness News is live across Ghana on a host of affiliate stations, including our YouTube channel, CityTube. We are also on Facebook. We are on citynewsroom.com. And it's an interactive show. You can join us with your messages 0549-986-996. Let's start off with the real sector now, shall we? And there's a line that has been constructed, a railway line from Tema. It was supposed to terminate in Akosombo, now it's been extended to Mpakadang in the eastern region. A new train was imported, which train we are told was involved in an accident today. Let's go on the phone line and speak to the Hohwe Member of Parliament, who is Minister for Railway Development, the Honorable John Peter Amewu, on more in relation to this particular subject. Honorable, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you, and good evening to your listeners.
Good evening to you, too. What happened to that train that, I'm sure it went through my village, because the rail line goes through my community on the way to the eastern region. What happened?
Yeah, today, approximately about 12:15, the ministry, in collaboration with our Polish engineers, with the Ghana Railway Development Authority and the company, conducted a test run. And from kilometer zero, which is at the workshop, Tema, towards kilometer 98 at Mpakadang. On approaching kilometer 76, a Kia truck passed right across the rail line, you know, stationary. And you know, it was in a curve. So as the train approached, the driver tried to apply the static brake to enable the train stopped. But because it was very close to the Kia track, unable to stop, and therefore ran straight into it. The engineers are currently working on it. The train has been brought back to the workshop. The Kia driver himself has reported himself to the police station, but the conduct of the driver as of now cannot be well explained. And the good one is that all the passengers and the inspectors on board the train, of course, none of them got injured. And we are currently in the process of assessing the damage to the train. Technically, I would say the train is still in very good form, nothing in terms of electrical or the engine has been disturbed, except the front that got slightly damaged. the Polish engineers who were assembling the train are in charge, expected to be handed over to government, but government had not yet taken a complete ownership of the train. So we are hoping that the insurance company will work on it as quickly as possible for it to put this train back on the line.
So where exactly did this happen, these accidents? The kilometer 76.
Kilometer 76. That's getting quite close to Mpakadam. Yeah.
So it had crossed the Volta River by then?
Precisely.
I see. Talk to us about... So you said everybody on board was safe.
Everybody is safe, yeah.
The Kia truck driver has reported himself. There were no passengers on the Kia truck, I presume.
My brother, it was quite an unfortunate incident because what we were told, eyewitness, said categorically that they saw the Kia driver. He drove his truck, then went and parked straight across the rail line, came down from the car, and then vanished. And so nobody knew what, you know, prompted him to do that. The intention is not quite clear. I don't want to read any ill motives into it at this stage, but I can assure you that the police are in charge of the investigations, and at the appropriate time, we'll feed Ghanaians with what actually happened.
Was the test run publicized so that someone may know that a train is going to pass through a certain point at a certain time? And I'm talking about possibility of someone doing this on purpose. Was this test run advertised or publicized?
Well, of course, the engineers, they normally use this the maintenance track on the line. So, of course, they inform people, you know, by that this thing is going to be conducted. And this is a train line, you know, which the maintenance vehicle always flies on it. So, yes, of course, communities along know that this process is ongoing.
Could there also be a possibility that they do not know that it's going to be used by a regular train? Because, you know, it's a new line, which
I
is
agree,
not...
I agree perfectly with you, but as our culture needs to change as a country. This is a train line. It's been constructed not quite long, but they are constantly, the maintenance track, you know, run on that line almost every day. So under no circumstances would you have to drive your car and park on it.
Even the line...
The maintenance track. I was on the maintenance track just about 2 days ago. We taking a drive from Tema to Mpakadam. We had to stop almost about 5 stops because people were sleeping on the line. People were, doing all kinds of things, drying. People were washing their things and drying in across the line. So I agree that we need to do a lot of education, you know, as human as we are and people from, you know, this part of the world. We will continue to do that kind of education, which I agree perfectly with you.
Even busy lines like the one at Circle is a place where goods are exhibited for sale. People only move them when the train is coming. So it's really going to be a difficult one. I don't know what you're going to do because you can't police the track every day, 24 hours a day. And at intersections that you have done overpasses, that shouldn't be a problem. But because you have a lot of intersections where roads are crossing the rail line, I don't know what you're going to do. Maybe level crossings, how are you going to deal with that? Put people at those stations? It's going to be a lot of work, isn't it?
This particular line is a modern line. You know, if you look at the underpass and the overpasses that have been constructed along this line, we don't expect anybody to cross this train line. The designers have taken all this into consideration. So if you ride down from kilometer zero to, you know, Mpakadam, you see a number of underpasses and overpasses. Okay. So this is not like the old ones where you have, you know, people crossing left and right. If you want to cross and the train is moving, you either go underpass or you go overpass, depending on the kilometer at which you are. As much as we continue to do the education and the training of the people around, it's also expected that as a country, we should begin, you know, to change some of this attitude. I agree with you that the old lines, people are there. But those ones, because there are no underpasses and overpasses, this one has been constructed to feed the modern practices. You know, so we have to adhere to the culture of, you know, doing the right thing.
Let's talk about this new train you were test driving or test riding today. We brought it from Poland. Is it for us? Is it for some private person? Tell us the story around this new train we have.
This is purchased by His Excellency Nana Akufo-Addo's government for the good people of Ghana. So it's not for any other person. It's for for the people of Ghana and for the Republic of Ghana, you know. So it's our thing. It's part of the aggressive agenda by His Excellency to make sure that we revitalize our railway sector. So it's for us Ghanaians, and it's going to be run, you know, by Ghanaians. Training has been conducted, and I can assure you that this would, you know, add a number of value to the people who live up there in terms of their transportation down to Accra.
Can we know what the terms of purchase are? Did we buy it on a loan? Did we pay up front?
It was an outright purchase. And it's going to be run by Ghanaians.
So it will belong to the Railway Development Authority. How much did we buy this train for, please? And how many coaches do we have?
I'm not in a position, but I think one of them is in excess of about $7 million, if I'm right.
Dollars or cedis?
Yes. Dollars.
So we bought two trains?
Yes, please.
How many coaches per train?
This is not for freight. This is for passengers. So this is a DMU. We call it diesel multiple unit or double multiple unit, whatever it is. But it's a diesel multiple unit. So you have both the front end and then the back end. So it doesn't have the coaches attached because it's solely for passengers but not for freight.
So it's just one short bus? It's not a number of buses?
It can carry quite close to about 200. So it's quite long. It's a long and a very beautiful train. It has a lot of beautiful facilities and modern facilities. Charging points, you know, urinal, toilet, communication system. You enjoy. This is a train that you can take, you know, on any long distance. If you're traveling from, you know, the modern world to any other part of the country.
I was going to complain that you should have taken me on the test ride so I see for myself. But considering the accident you encountered today, I'm happy I didn't.
No. I'm going to do that. My only fear is that maybe you wouldn't want to come down if you bought that train. It's so comfortable.
I'll alight at Loom and then walk to Asuchari Junction. But
we'll definitely do that.
So there are two of them.
There's going to be a tour for weekends. We're going to run a tour for people who want to use the train for other purposes. So there's a lot of facilities coming on board when the president commissioned this.
Did we bring both into the country or one is in the country for now?
One is in the country now. The other one is on the way. Yeah.
Interesting.
So we're going to commission this, start running it, and then it's joined by the second one.
When are we commissioning it? Do you have a date yet?
We expected to do this. You know, we want to do the test run for at least 3 weeks. So we expected to do this in by the close of May or first week in June. You know, our expectation is that the test run should be done at least for between 2 to 3 weeks. And then the president comes and commissions the train together with the line. You've seen the line, very beautiful.
Yes.
From Tema to Mpakadam.
Yes,
the
I have.
The first ever rail bridge that we have had in the South region, a rail bridge across River Volta Ascension. Very, very beautiful one, of course. And it fell also as a tourist potential for this country. So as Ghanaian, we need to be extremely grateful for what His Excellency Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo has done once again.
That was intended to cut goods from the Tema port to the batches on the Volta River or Volta Lake for northwards bound traffic so that people from Burkina and Niger who are coming to take goods from us will not have to bring their trucks down south here, so that we'll dispatch the goods on the batches and take them to Yape or wherever it will terminate on the Volta River. So the thinking was that you were going to put cargo trains on the line. Why are you putting passenger trains on the line?
No. Every train line, depending on the intent, you know, we either have freight or passenger. So we are not only putting a passenger on it, it's also going to be a freight. The freight will come in when the terminal at Mpakadam is completed. And also we need to make sure that together with the Ministry of Transport, some work would have to be done, you know, along the Volta line upward. So that it would be very easy to put a badge, you know, on that line at the river and then run the goods to that end. So that is in progress. It's work in progress. While we continue to pursue that agenda, what we intend to do within the medium term now is to start the operation of a passenger while we work towards the freight arrangement in the near future.
Are you going to put both passenger trains on this particular line, or the second one, which is yet to come, would be on a different line?
No, no, it's going to be on the same line. It's the same line. Just like a route from Accra to Kumasi, it takes both private vehicles and then the articulator or the long vehicle. So
I'm talking about the two passenger lines from trains from Poland. Both of them are going to be on the Tema-Kosombo line.
Precisely, because it's constructed for a double gauge, not the standard.
Gauge.
Not the narrow gauge that we see, you know. So this is a standard gauge, so it's going to work to fit that.
Okay. The question that would come up is, have you done the analysis, the passenger analysis, to know how many people from Akosombo come to Accra daily or Tema daily, and whether or not these people would be willing to join the train so that it's not going to be an empty train on the tracks where we would be losing money?
Yes, some feasibility studies have been done. And of course, again, you have to admit the fact that this is a social service. All across the world, running a train business in terms of the passenger, it's not economically a viable business. There's always that viability gap that are closed by governments across the world. Until you begin to run a freight business, then you begin to make some return on your investment. We have done some feasibility studies, of course, and we expect that within the first month to start with, we are going to have about 70%, you know, capacity full of this train moving between Bon, Joapon, and then the Tema. The capacity of the train is, I think, is in excess of about 200 people. And so if we are able to run on that, we should be able to cover our operational costs at least, but not necessarily to cover the initial investment cost, you know, which is quite expensive.
I'm familiar with that area. I'm familiar with where the train line spars, and I'm also familiar with where the Tema-Akosombo road passes. The line is a bit far from the main Tema to Akosombo road, where you have people inhabiting. How are you going to deal with that? Because if I were living at Asuchari Junction, it would take me a lot of time to move to, say, Agomeda or Loom or Gigedokun, where I go to board this train. If I were living in Akuse or Kpong, it would take me a longer time to go to where the train passes. How are you going to arrange that particular transport service? Because the rail line is not moving along the main road. So how are you going to get passengers to move all the way there, western side
of
the line?
What we've done now is to construct what we call access road from the main road to the train station. We have over 8 train stations, modern train stations, built to, you know, specifications that passengers can go and park their vehicles, wait for the train. The train is going to run, you know, according to time. So you can drive there. We have a very vast parking area where you park your vehicles and then you can board the train depending on your time of arrival. So it's very convenient. People, if you are moving from Akosombo now to Tema, you agree with me the traffic density, you know, especially as you get close to the Tema runabout, the traffic density is quite intense. And so people ordinary will now begin to park their vehicle and join the train to Tema. I mean, if I'm even traveling from home and I get to Pong, I think it would be ideal for me to join the train from Pong to Accra, you know, than to go through that traffic, which is going to take you almost about 2 to 3 hours. So we expect passengers to get interested in this new arrangement and also if some traffic on the line as we progress.
It sounds good, but if I took a train from Joapon, where the line passes again, I would be happy that the train terminates in Accra. I don't want to stop at Tema. What measures are you putting in place to ensure that when the train gets to Tema, it continues to Accra and vice versa from Accra to Joapon, so that I don't have to know that I need to go to Tema to take a train to Akosombo, or I have to end at Tema when I'm coming to Accra? What can you do? Because we already have a line to Accra, don't we?
Yeah, currently there's a section, you know, the narrow gauge runs from Tema to Accra currently. And so from Mpaka down to Tema, we're going to synchronize the time arrival of that train so that they will be able to move from Tema to Accra. We're trying to bring another train from Takoradi. Currently, there are 2 trains in Takoradi. One of them being parked for some years now, but not being used. It's fairly new. So we are bringing that to Accra to complement the old narrow gauge that we have. So when this one arrives, those who are going to Accra, of course, can board the old one, which is running on the narrow gauge to Accra, from Tema to Accra. That arrangement is being taken care of. Yeah.
So this means that the new train we have cannot use the Tema to Accra line. It's not possible, technically.
No, because it has not been designed for that. The design, as I stated earlier, was specifically for a standard gauge. So you cannot drive from a standard gauge onto a narrow gauge and continue.
So it means that if you're coming from Akosombo to Accra, you have to take the first train, end at Tema, and then take the second one from Tema to Accra.
Precisely.
I see. Someone has sent me a question to ask you. He says, does a train have a radar? And this has to do with the accident, which radar, I believe, would have prompted the train about obstruction ahead.
Yes, this train has all the modern facilities. As we started a test run today, those facilities are also being worked on, you know. And so the detection of the vehicle on the line was not affected in terms of the arrival. What happened actually is that the driver was able to see it some few this time because it was parked in the tent. But the radar and the other detection facilities have not yet been put into full implementation.
Okay, so we do not have that.
The assembling of this train commenced just about 3 weeks. You know, so what we're doing now is just testing the physical stability of the train itself to see the level at which it can move. So as assembling is about completing, they are just testing the train itself. We're going to test all the other facilities along the line.
So moving forward, this radar that is going to be installed would alert the train to a blockade or an obstruction ahead. So we should not expect a similar accident in the future where someone abandons a Kia truck on the track, even if it's in a corner.
Yes, that will happen. That will happen definitely. The train can even stop from the station in Tema. You know, that has also not been activated. There is a mechanism built in the train which is connected to the control station in Tema, where somebody can sit in the control station, and if the train is at kilometer 46, the person can sit in the control station in Tema and stop the train. That has not been activated. So all those things are put in place. We will be able to minimize some of these occurrences in the near future.
Okay, a few more questions. Forgive me, it's not every day we get you, so when I get you, I'll try to ask all the questions that I can. So many, many people are asking questions about this whole project.
I know the interest this train is generating, yeah. So I'm available to answer that.
Great. Now, yeah. The only passenger train we have currently moves from Tema to Accra. It was imported in 1987, the year I was born, which means it is older than me. How old is this train that we are bringing in?
This is a brand new train. I think it arrived in Ghana about 3 weeks ago. So it's about 21 days old.
21 days since it was imported, but how old is it? When was it, fixed?
So the manufacturing process commenced, I think, less than a year, barely a year. But it's a brand new train. The first ever kilometer advance in terms of what we are witnessing now, the longest what we saw in Ghana. We did some test runs when the technical team went to Poland for inspection. You know, test run has also been done there before it was together. So it's a brand new train.
Okay. The next question is coming through from Francis in Accra. He says, please ask the minister about Ayalolo buses. If government could not manage common buses, how much more trains, which are more costly? The person is talking about maintenance. How are we going to maintain this new beautiful train?
That is why I stated earlier about the culture. The person who asked the question asked a very brilliant question. And it depends on his culture also as a citizen of this country. So our culture of maintenance, we're going to improve on it. I agree with him perfectly. But I think that person may also have the same deficiency. So as a country, let's all look into that. Okay. But I can promise that, there are mechanisms in place to make sure that this particular train is maintained.
Okay. There's a question again from another person who is interested on the line to Amasaman, the Nsawam line. And says, I should ask you if you are aware the theft of the Kotoku railway tracks. People are stealing the metals that are used for that line because it has been out of use for months now, if not years.
Yes. suffering has been going on for some time now. Even just yesterday, we have to alert the national security and the police about it. It again runs to the same point, the last question, the person who asked the last question. So it's the same thing about the culture of the people that we govern. How would you just go and be stealing a line? You know, I can understand sometimes, but it is the responsibility of the law enforcement agency to do that. I am a minister. I'm responsible to build, you know, rail lines, you know. So the best we have done and which we continue to do is to alert the various agencies. And I think the police have worked very, very well on that. The national security have been informed. And so I just want to use this medium to sound a warning that, of course, if you are caught, you know, you'll be dealt with. The law is there. You know, people who are caught will definitely be dealt with. So it's true that suffering is going on. Yes.
Okay. Another questioner wants you to clarify more on the park and ride. Do you have a parking lot at these stations where a person can come and park their car and take the train to Accra or Tema and know that their car is safe?
Beautiful, 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 beautiful parking lot. You know, built to international standard. You know, you enjoy in the nighttime. You can have the best of all. I mean, every facility is at this station. The parking lot, you have, you know, washroom, you know, offices. Big vast area for entertainment and a lot of other facilities.
Okay.
So this is one of the modern cities that we put in up here.
Okay, Mousy's question from Abutia 30.
My goodness.
His question is from Abutia 30 in the Volta, which an area you know much about. He wants to know how much it will cost to ride, but I'm sure you are yet to figure out the pricing. Have you settled on the fares yet?
How much it will cost to
take a train from, say, Akosombo, if you have the fare list yet?
Well, I think from Joapon to Accra, we're estimating 80 Ghana cedis.
That's a lot, too. How much does a trotro charge?
I have no idea about how much a trotro charge is.
Look, I'm doing the analysis. I'm doing analysis. That's almost 1 million old cedis. Maru Bucho, Joapon,
again. It's not up to 1 million.
800,000. I mean, just to sit in a train. I mean, if I can sit in a 207 Benz bus, I'm not sure it'll be 80 cedis.
No, but this takes you in and takes you back. I mean, we're looking at this. So I think it's between 80 and Ghana, 100 Ghana cedis.
So
you know, the comfort, also the discomfort that you'll be, you know, considering the traffic and all this. I think this fare is quite fair, you know, and we'll try to explain to our customers as we progress about the need to board this train when we start the operation.
So many questions are coming through. I'm not sure we can exhaust all of them. We have to do a sit down so that we can answer all these. But someone wants you to give this train to a private sector company to run. Is that something you would consider? And also, are private people allowed to buy trains and put on this track like a normal road?
Yeah, of course, there's a third-party asset. You know, in every modern institution, we try to create a third-party asset. And so what we're expecting to do is that if you're a private person and you have the one for the freight, which people had already applied, we'll open it up for freight, and you can bring in your train and run on it. Government construct roads from Accra to Bohue, you know, and you see the state bus running on it. You see private people running on it. And so it's a similar, you know, approach that the trains are also going to run. With this particular one, there are two schools of thought, and they yet to get the clarification and final approval from cabinet to see how we're going to progress. The first school of thought was to come out with just like the Ghana Railway Company, you know, of course belonging to government to run. And then the second one is to get a private person to partner, you know, this company and run it. People think that there's nothing stopping government in going to competition with private sector. All over the world, governments are in competition with private sector. If you go to China, most of their best, you know, companies are government companies, and they are in competition with the private sector. We can also do the same in Ghana. So it is not everything that Ghana government runs that is being run down. We should also begin to acknowledge that government has some positive in terms of gains in some areas. And so we can also equally go into Competition Service Sector.
Last but one question. Oti Mensa says, when will the trains on the Nsawam Accra stretch start running? When are you going to open that track?
That's a good question. I can say it offhand now. You know, it all has to do with funding. And I hope you are all aware of our funding issues. So we'll continue to... I can't give you my straight answer to that. I have no idea. Please.
Now, my favorite question. This one is from me. When are we going to see the sky train that your predecessor promised us?
The sky train?
Yes, when are we going to see the train in the sky?
I haven't worked anything on the sky train. So I don't think you'll see during my tenure as a Minister of Finance, a Minister of Railway Development. What we intend to do is to approach the Ministry of Finance and solicit some support, as my predecessor started before he left office. The Ministry of Finance was more like the ministry that was driving the financial aspect of bringing that train into the country. I know some progress have been made. The new Minister of Finance is yet to be briefed, and we sit down together to see how we continue. But I don't see it working immediately during my tenure as a Minister of Railway Development. That is not possible, and it cannot be possible.
Thank you. There's someone asking from Hohoe when the train is going to reach there. I don't know if you have an answer for that. When is the track going to go upwards in the OT region so it forms the Eastern Corridor stretch to the north?
With past experiences, and what I've noticed is that it takes about 4 to 5 years to construct a 100-kilometer line. So if the money is made available today, maybe in the next 5 years.
Thank you so much for speaking to us, Minister.
Thank you.
That's the Honourable Minister for Railway Development, John Peter Amewu, his MP for Hohoe. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM, broadcasting from number 11, Dr. Martin Loop in Adabraka, in Accra. We are also live around the globe on citynewsroom.com. And we are on a number of affiliate stations. Let me give you a list of them. In the Upper West region, we're on Bugli Radio, 88.6 FM Niwa. In the Upper East region, we're on WED, 88.3 FM in Zuarungu. In the Northern region, we're on Dasuma, 99.1 FM in Yendi. In the Volta region, we're on Holy, 98.5 FM in Aflau. In the Eastern region, we're on Wright, 90.1 FM in Somanya. In the Ashanti region, we're on Orange, 107.9 FM in Kumasi. In the Bono region, we're on Greener, 95.9 FM in Sunyani. In the Western region, we're on Premier, 100.5 FM, Beach, 105.5 FM, and Sky Power, 93.5 FM. All of them are based in Takrady. We are broadcasting from number 11, Dr. Martin Loop in Adabraka, in Accra. My name is Umaru Sandamadu, and I'm here with Hawa Idrisu Mustafa. When we come back, we have an update for you on the Gbobu Wolomo's wife, the 15-year-old girl who was taken by the government since the brouhaha around her marriage to the Gbobu priest. There's an update today.
We would like you all to know that the medical assessment on the child, it indicates that she's not pregnant and she has no immediate health concerns. Thus, the child will be reunited with her family today, 18th April 2024, after the parents have signed a bond.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
Let your voice be heard on Eyewitness News on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag Eyewitness News.
You're welcome back. The Ministry of Gender, Children and Social Protection has announced that the 15-year-old girl involved in the child marriage controversy with the Gbobu Wolomo Na Okromo will be reunited with her parents today. This decision follows the advice of the Attorney General. The ministry has stated that the girl has undergone psychological and medical examinations which confirmed that she is not pregnant. Speaking to the press regarding this development, the Minister Designate for Gender, Children and Social Protection, Dakwa Newman, explained that the girl will be released to her parents after they sign a bond.
The Social Welfare Department under the Ministry of Gender has taken the child through counselling. The required medical assessments have also been undertaken. The counselors and caregivers have had conversations with the child and relatives about her education, her health, and her future prospects. So we'd like you all to know that the medical assessment on the child, it indicates that she's not pregnant and she has no immediate health concerns. Na Okoma's date of birth, from records at her creche and her primary schools she attended, indicates that she's 15 years old, and she was born on the 18th of July, 2008. The child will continue to pursue her education, and the Attorney General has issued an interim report, which is dated 18th April, 2024, and has advised that in the best interest of the child, and in accordance with Section 2 and 5 of the Children's Act, the child should be released to her parents pending their complete review of the docket. Thus, the child will be reunited with her family today, 18th April, 2024, after the parents have signed a bond. The bond is part of the social welfare protocols that need to be undertaken before she's reunited with the family. The parents are just signing to say that they are going to adhere to all child rights laws that this country has. So it's just to ensure that they append their signature to adhere to all the laws concerning children. It is interested in the welfare of all Ghanaian children. Okay. It doesn't end here. Still, social welfare will be making visits to the child's home. This is pending all investigations are closed out. So in the interim, the state still has a responsibility, and the state will be carrying out these responsibilities. If there's a further need to assist the parents in one way or the other concerning the best interest of the child, then the state will come in. For now, we are handing her over to her parents, and the parents are taking full responsibility for their child. They will sign a bond in lieu of this. And so for now, until there's a need, the government will not step in.
Dakon Newman is the Minister Designate for Gender, Children and Social Protection. Now, Deputy Attorney General Alfred Tia Iyabua added that the Office of the AG has taken possession of the full docket on the matter.
Now, I wish to indicate that our office has taken possession or custody of the full docket on the matter. And our officers are reviewing the docket to ascertain various issues. One, whether what took place was actually marriage or not. We have not come to any conclusion on that issue yet. So the officers in the ministry are reviewing the docket, and when we come to any conclusion on that issue, it will be made known to the public. Number two, why, as the Honorable Chief Justice Minister said, why the need for pregnancy tests? When it comes to issues of children, especially those below the age of 16, if you have matters relating to marriage, whether sex or whatever, the first thing to do is to see whether that female has been carnally known. So the medical officer decided to examine the child to see whether she has been carnally known, and also to ascertain if indeed, if she had been carnally known, whether she is pregnant. So the report, I can confirm that all the examinations were conducted and she is intact. So what is now left is to ascertain what took place on the 30th of March, and if anything adverse is found in this particular docket, we give you the assurance that we will initiate prosecutions. But if there's nothing adverse about what happened, you also let you know. That is what I want you to know now.
Alfred Tiaboy is a Deputy Attorney General.
This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. We are broadcasting from Adabraka in Accra. We are also around the globe on citynewsroom.com. Let me bring a few of your messages that you've been sending through. Jones Adboy in La says, good evening, Umaru. If you're test driving a train in an area that is not known for such activities, the necessary road regulations must be in place to curtail such eventualities. These excuses are unpardonable. Ghanaians are not angry enough. Akapol Jr. in Ahapomim says the train accident should be probed as soon as possible to ascertain whether or not the driver of the truck did not cause damage to the train intentionally. I smell an umbrella in this accident as a way of sabotaging the government. Bayiriele says, good evening, Sanda. It's sad to note that everything in Ghana is just going backwards, all because of some selfish and self-centered political bad leaders we have in the country. Fuel prices going up day in, day out, economy on its knees, standard of living on is substandard. What at all have we, especially the youth in this country, done to deserve this unfair treatment? God save Mother Ghana. You can also send your message 0549-986-996, 0549-986-996. Echo Autry from Shy Hills, where the train passes, says, in relation to the 15-year-old wife of the 62-year-old Nungwa chief, why is the ministry reporting on only she not being pregnant? How about a report saying she has been sexually assaulted or not? The ministry must come again. And that's actually a story that we're going to go to, because the Minister Designate for Gender, Children and Social Protection called a press conference today. At the press conference, Dakwa Newman, who is also a member of parliament, said that the young lady, who is 15 years old and will be turning 16 on 18th July this year, would be released to the family. And that is the information that has been released. Again, she also told us that the Na Okromo would be reunited with her parents. So she has not said whether she will be sent to the fetish priest or the priest of Bobu, but she actually said that she'll be reunited with her family. Again, she says that she's not pregnant. A test has been conducted. She was negative when it came to pregnancy. Again, the Attorney General is still studying the information. If there's need for prosecution, the Attorney General's department will do so. That's what Deputy Attorney General Afretua Yeboa has also said to us. So that is the development we have. The young lady is yet to be returned to the family. When she does get back to the family and we pick up that information, we will definitely share it with you here on 97.3 City FM and also on our television platform, City TV. The City Newsroom at 8 p.m. should be bringing you updates as and when we get them. But for now, we move to the energy and mine sector.
The chairman of the Mines and Energy Committee of Parliament, Samuel Atacha, says the committee would invite the Volta River Authority, VRA, to ascertain the cost of the relocation of the Ameri plant to Kumasi in the Ashanti region. This follows allegations by a member of the committee, Edward Bauer, that government spent $38 million in relocating the Ameri power plant to Kumasi. Speaking to Sojourner, Samuel Atacha says such a claim is unfortunate.
Well, it's very legitimate for a committee of parliament of any hue or color to do oversight. It's constitutionally mandated. So that is perfect. That is right. That when you are a committee of parliament, the agencies under you, you can oversight them. My only concern is that if you've not gotten the consequence of the expenditure, how can you say it's expensive? So it's like you come to a conclusion before you invite the entity to come. What we should do is that the entity should come before us. Let's interrogate it. And in the interrogation, we'll see whether it's a cutthroat price or not. If not, excuse me to say, it's an unfortunate conjecture. You can't be sure. And then what are the comparative analysis you are making, since you don't even know the constituents of the expenditure? That is the problem I have.
With this concern, is the committee going to invite the VRA to provide these details?
Well, yes. A full session with them that we will go through a lot of the activities that they are doing. And this will be very, very important for the committee to come to terms with. Yeah, but I am of the humble view that sometimes we shouldn't go on air over matters and come to some conclusion or suspicion over matters that we have not thoroughly investigated as a committee of parliament.
Samuel Atachia is chairman of the Mines and Energy Committee of Parliament.
Let's go to the education sector. The National Association of Graduate Teachers, NAGRAT, is serving notice of a mass action against government. It says government ought to take a certain decision in relation to its pension or pensions of its members or face its wrath. And we do know what the wrath would possibly mean. NGO Kabonu is president of the National Association of Graduate Teachers, NAGRAT. He's joined us on the line. NGO, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you, Mark.
You just returned from a strike 2 weeks or so ago, and you're already threatening another one?
Well, this one is because of money that has been deducted from people's salary for purposes such as their tier 2 pension and also the dues that is collected on for the unions to be able to operate as a trade union. Now, the monies are deducted from workers' salary, and then the money is not immediately transferred or transmitted to its designated point. For example, if you pay salaries to workers and you deduct their dues for the month of January, what you do is that after you've paid salaries, you transfer the dues to where it is supposed to go. Simple. Number two, if it is mandated by law that a percentage of a worker's salary, a worker should contribute towards his tier two, and then the control and accountant general deducts the money on behalf of the trust, what do? You send it to the trust scheme. But unfortunately, the last time the Controller and Accountant General's Department transferred deducted pension funds to the trust scheme is in June 2023. And the last time Controller gave money that deducted by way of dues to public sector unions is in December 31st, 2023. So the question we want to ask is that, when these monies are deducted, where are they kept? Who keeps them? What is the purpose of keeping them for this while? Are we to suspect that someone is doing something untoward with monies that have been deducted for third parties? These are questions that it's not a case where we are demanding from government something that we think that we legitimately deserve from government. This is our own money that is meant for pensions and meant for the running of unions. And one wonders why government should be keeping that money for whatever purpose.
It means that the money has been deducted. The money was supposed to be sent to your second pension company to deal with, but the money doesn't get there.
The money is being deducted. The monies are in various forms. Money that are supposed to go to tier two should go to tier two. Money that is supposed to come by way of dues to the union should come by way of dues to the union. Money that are deducted on behalf of banks and institutions to people's loan and people's debt should go there. And one wonders why you would deduct money in the last time you paid some deductions was in December. So January, February, March, you still owe the unions their dues.
Now, have you tried maybe meeting with the controller to find out where he sends the money that he deducts?
Well, we have done several write-ups. They didn't start this behavior today. We have done several write-ups indicating that, look, when you are keeping people's money, you are creating a situation where people are losing value on the money. When money is kept and not invested, when money is not put to use for the purpose for which it was meant, you are devaluing the money over time. Therefore, when you deduct the money, the simple thing you should do is to pay the monies into the account of the designated institutions. All that they say, oh, we will pay. Are we to suspect that the government of Ghana is beginning to use the poor workers' monies to sustain the economy? Are we to suspect that the father is now borrowing money from the son? Is that what it is going on in our country? Have we gotten there? Somebody needs to come and explain to us, or there is something untoward going on that we do not know. Someone needs to come and explain.
And you were saying that by next week, if they don't come with this explanation, you're going to advise yourself.
No. Next week they should transfer all the money, because look, it is not as if the money is not with them. The money is with them. They've deducted the money. It is with them.
So they should just make the payment for you. You want the payment to reflect with the company.
That's all. It's like Umaru. You've taken my 1,000 Ghana, and I say, Charlie, give me my money. This one, there is no wahala.
Anyway, thank you for speaking to us. We'll wait to see what happens from the government side.
Thank you.
That's Angel Kabonu, he's president of the National Association of Graduate Teachers, NAGRAT. Hawa?
Now, still on the education front, the Teachers and Educational Workers Union of TUC has given the government up to the end of the month to settle all arrears owed its members in SNIT and Tier 2 pensions contributions. According to the union, despite the government deducting these contributions monthly from their salaries, it has been in arrears for several months and efforts to get the government to pay them have been unsuccessful. Speaking during a 13th quadrennial national delegate conference, the general secretary of the union, Mark Dinjira Kranche, stated that the union would collaborate with other public sector workers to take appropriate action if the government fails to fulfill its obligations.
Our asking government to, as a matter of urgency, release all arrears and its attendant interest. Or if you call, if you like, and its attendant penalties, because the laws were made by government. The penalty thereof for delaying in releasing of funds, it must be done within this month. Otherwise, we will join hands with other public sector unions and do what unions know how to do. Because the future is not far away. The future starts from today. So if my investment does not go to the fund manager to invest and give me the needed profit, then you are jeopardizing my pension gradually. And in this country, pensions already are low. So if the little investment that will enhance my pensions more, and also move up my head now, and then move it here.
Mark Dinjira Kranche is General Secretary of the Teachers and Educational Workers Union.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
Get the details. Every significant financial transaction. Every market movement. And all the policies that affect your business. City Business News. Be informed.
Time now for City Business News on Eyewitness News, brought to you by GCB Bank PLC. GCB Personal Loan, make that big move and dream a reality. My name is Hawa Idrisu Mustafa. Details of our stories now. Minister for Finance Dr. Mohammed Amin Adam has stated that government is committed to implementing more reforms to remove the hindrances within the energy sector to ensure stability. This comes as there are concerns for government to speedily address the challenges facing the country's energy sector. In recent weeks, numerous regions across the country, particularly in the Greater Accra region, have been grappling with power outages, eliciting frustration among citizens. Dr. Mohammed Amin Adam gave the assurance while responding to a question during a panel discussion at the ongoing IMF spring meetings on attracting investors into the energy sector despite the challenges the sector is experiencing.
We are talking about $1.9 billion of shortfall for a commodity which is commercial, like energy services. You cannot be using the budget to finance shortfalls of about $1.9 billion. And this is why we have been pursuing a number of reforms to bring the energy sector to financial sustainability. For example, we have been implementing what we call the Energy Sector Recovery Program since 2019. Which is intended to bring the sector to financial sustainability. There's a task force chaired by the Vice President, which is overseeing the implementation of the various reforms and the measures that we are implementing to strengthen the finances of the sector include IPP renegotiation. Since 2022, Public Utilities Regulatory Commission put in place a multi-year tariff framework that led to increase in tariffs by about 70%. But this is to assure investors that we admit there are challenges, but we vote as a government to take the necessary bullets in order for us to put the sector in a more sustainable manner.
The finance minister also underscored the need to be deliberate and intentional in policies and programs to rapidly expand energy access by the end of the year.
You have to be deliberate about energy access. And so right from early 1990s, we were very intentional. The government decided that Ghana must achieve universal access to electricity. And so we put in the relevant policies, a national electrification scheme, we put in a rural electrification program, and then we also put in a self-help electrification program through which communities and the government shared the cost of electricity access. And so today, it's paid off. You are talking about 87. My figures show that we've achieved 88.85% access. The rest that we have not extended electricity to are usually off-grid communities, island communities. And we are trying to achieve that through mini-grids and other smaller systems that will extend electricity to all of them so we can achieve universal access. By the standard of the industry, universal access is about 90%.
That was the Finance Minister, Dr. Mohamed Amin Adam. Some economists have cast doubt about the International Monetary Fund's projection that Ghana's inflation will retreat to single digits by the end of 2025. The International Monetary Fund, IMF, in its Economic Outlook report, projected Ghana's inflation to retreat to single digits by the end of 2025. It forecast an end-of-year inflation rate of 8% for Ghana, aligning with the government's goals outlined in the 2024 budget. Speaking to City Business News, economist Professor Lord Mensah said this projection is impracticable.
And the reason why I'm saying it's not feasible is that we are about to resume our debt payment, external debt payment, after the negotiations. I mean, that is when we'll get to know the true level of the exchange rate. Even though our debt service will come down, government will definitely be on the market looking for dollars to go and pay for this our debt. And we know very well that if the exchange rate, depreciates, it tends to have, a pass-through effect on inflation. Because we live in a country where, the dominant or the essentials of our living, which has to do with, fuel usage and all those, which we don't manufacture them here in Ghana, has to do with we have to import them. And obviously, once you import them, you're importing them with exchange rate, foreign currency, and the exchange rate is up. And it will feed into, importation price. Obviously, prices are going to go up with that.
You had economist Professor Lord Mensah. The Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, is urging small and medium-sized enterprises and entrepreneurs to embrace investment from investors as they aim to expand their operations. SEC is optimistic such investment would propel SMEs to fully achieve their potential and address unemployment challenges. Director General of SEC, Reverend Daniel Ogbami Tete, in a sideline interview with City Business News at the Ghana Venture Capital and Private Equity Association annual conference, said SMEs and entrepreneurs need to keep proper record to attract investments.
It's important for the SMEs also to address, how they govern their operations. So corporate governance issues are important. When you have a private equity or venture capital fund coming through, they would require certain structures to be in place. I think the issue of transparency, making sure that you are not dealing with a black box, and sometimes unfortunately people tend to want to hold everything close to their chest.
That was the Director General of the Securities and Exchange Commission, Reverend Daniel Ogbami Tete, ending City Business News on Eyewitness News. The Business News and Eyewitness News is brought to you by GCB Bank PLC. GCB Personal Loan, make that big move and dream a reality. My name is Hawa Idrisu Mustafa. Up next is Point Blank.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
This is Point Blank on Eyewitness News. My name is Umaru Sandama. Tonight on Point Blank, we're speaking with a lawyer who rose to the rank of Deputy Attorney General The people of Timpani gave him an opportunity to serve them in parliament. For some reason, they took the opportunity away again after the first term. The Honorable Joseph Kpenka, you're welcome to Point Blank.
Thank you, Umaru.
How are you doing?
Mischief detected. I'm doing very good.
This one is not this information that I'm giving to my listeners.
I said mischief detected.
No. I've stopped doing mischief. I'm a good boy now.
Very well.
I'm a repentant
soul. Thank you for your word.
How are you doing?
Grace.
It's been a while. How have you been doing?
Blessing.
Are you a retired politician who has decided to do law? Or your how is life? Because you did one term in Timpani, right?
Yes, I did 4 years.
You did one term. And that was the same time you also became deputy AG.
Deputy AG, yes, that's true.
Which is like, usually you come to parliament first term, you don't get an appointment, but you did.
Yes.
You served as deputy AG.
Yes.
How has it been?
Well, I was privileged, I must be honest. Even when I got there, one of the most powerful committees of parliament, I was the vice chair. Constitutional, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee. I was the vice chair until I was nominated as deputy AG. And then I ceded that to someone else because of the issue of conflict of interest.
Okay.
Otherwise, I would have continued with that, which I so much loved. And as you, in your intro, indicated, let me first of all say a very good evening to the very cherished listeners of Timpani constituency, because we are directly connected to one of the stations in Timpani and they are listening to us. A very good evening to everyone there. And as you indicated, well, I am nowhere near retirement from politics.
Okay.
If I will tell you anything at all, I have just started.
Okay.
Because as indicated earlier, I got an opportunity to serve the people for 4 years. I was also a deputy minister. After that, the opportunity was taken away from me. And I've since been in private legal practice. I'm not in government. I'm in private legal practice where I run Pemka & Co. UC, which is located at Jowl here in Accra.
Okay.
And I also practice up north in Borga and etc. and across the country. And I work with other junior lawyers for that matter. So yes, my government is in power. I've served for 4 years. I'm no longer in government, but I'm taking active part in affairs as far as it concerns government.
Mm.
Because I'm still a very, very active member of this party. I serve the party in different capacities. Where opportunities avail themselves, I represent the party on certain platforms. Media platforms and other areas to be able to articulate the position of the party as far as national issues are concerned. So yes, I'm engaged in a broad spectrum of things, and apart from the legal practice, as I've said, I run commentary on matters that are of national interest.
Interesting. You are also the parliamentary candidate for the MPP in Timpani. We'll talk about that, but let's talk about the office you once occupied, the AG's department. It's been in the news lately, so the AG's department just secured a conviction yesterday against the former Maslock boss, 10 years in the court. Again, before then, there were several other issues that the AG has been pursuing. Now, we also know that the AG is also involved in this girl in Nungwa, teenager who was supposed to have been married and all of those matters. I don't know if you have a comment on any of these before we move on from there.
Thank you very much. I'll be very brief. You know, the teenager who is alleged to have been married, you see, my comment on that is legal. You see, the question is, was she married or betrothed to somebody?
Mm-hmm.
The two are very distinct. And our laws do not criminalize betrothal. Our laws criminalize child marriage. That is because the age at which consent is sought for sex, for example, is 16 or above. So if you are below that, you are 15 years, clearly you cannot have sex. And so you cannot marry. So anybody who marries a 15-year-old and engages in sex will be charged with a crime of defilement.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Now, so when you betroth a child below the age of 16 to another person, what's the meaning of betrothal customarily? You have to construe it in the realms of customary law, whether betrothal means marriage or it is a presumption that in future there will be marriage and that when the child is of age, the marriage will be consummated. So if we go strictly by the traditional meaning that children are betrothed and then they are well taken care of and groomed, and when they become 18, they go to school, all right. When they become 18 or above, then they marry. If, as it stands now, strictly speaking, there is no law in the country that criminalizes that. Okay? And we have to be very careful.
Big lawyer, an MP for Madina, Francis Xavier Sosu, he quoted for me the Children's Act.
Yes.
And he said in the Children's Act, the law says you cannot force a child into marriage.
I like the aspect you're talking about,
and
force.
Yeah, he uses betrothal. Yes. He said betrothal is a force. In fact, he said betrothal outlawed by the Children's Act.
Let me state this without equivocation. What you have stated is not in black and white. It can be inferred and construed as a whole.
Okay.
Because you see, forced marriage and actually engaging in a child in sex are strictly criminal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so when you go to, and you know that our constitution is very clear,
mm-hmm.
that you cannot charge a person with something that did not constitute an offense at the time it was actually committed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and our constitution frowns on that, and it's very clear. So the provisions he's talking about, if they are in the Children's Act and they act as illegalities and etc., are there penal consequences that ought to be exacted?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if child betrothal, for example, as you have stated, he's quoted from the Children's Act and etc., child betrothal, what is the consequence of it? Do we have a penal consequence defined by the law?
Mm-hmm.
If we don't have a penal consequence, then betrothal, strictly speaking, in stricto sensu, will not be criminal. But it is the happenings during the betrothal that can trigger crime.
So if
you betroth a child, for mm-hmm. example, who is not 16, and then somebody takes that betrothed child and engages in sex with that child, and etc., then it's very clear that the person has engaged in crime, namely defilement.
So in our traditions where a child may be born, and even on the naming ceremony of the child, you are told that this child, when she grows up, we've given the child to you. That's betrothal.
Yes.
Or they say that we are giving our daughter to your son. When they grow up, they are going to get married. Strictly speaking, you're saying per our cultural or per our customary law,
yes.
It is not offensive to the law.
You see, that is why if you read our constitution very carefully, and that is why I've always advocated this, that you read the constitution and construe it as a whole. If you read Article 11, one of the sources of law is customary law.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read 39, the combined effect of it will give you a sense that customary law is part of our law.
Mm-hmm.
Insofar as it does not sin against any specific provision of statute or the constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember that it is very clear that any act or law that sins against the constitution is to the extent of that inconsistency and nullity.
Mm-hmm.
So strictly speaking, as I have said, if we want to outlaw something, we must be outright and
be specific.
And be specific on the matter.
So if
and amend the Criminal Offences Act, for example,
to reflect introduce
that betrothal is unlawful, and anybody who engages in it on summary conviction is entitled to up to a number of years in prison. When we state it in black and white, rather than going to infer
mm-hmm.
and etc., it would be of help to us. Because, as I said, I have combed round, and specifically, there is no provision that says that betrothal is a criminal offense, and anybody who betroths a child commits an offense and is liable to summary conviction to this number of penalty units or to a term of imprisonment or
mm-hmm.
to both,
mm-hmm.
which is what we've been doing with most of our laws. I think that if we want to do it, we should be outright
and
say so expressly.
To your legal mind, if the Nungwa Traditional Council is able to prove that what happened was a betrothal and not a marriage, they will escape.
They will escape it. But if they say that it was a marriage, and again, it will also be by evidence.
And they've even said that it's not a marriage to a human being. It's a marriage to a deity.
But that one is going to be very difficult to prove because our laws do not deal with deities and etc. where mm-hmm. you are going to be talking about spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Because spirituality cannot be proven in any court of law and mm-hmm. etc. So that will be a very different argument to make altogether. You know, because we even remember that, I know you'll be stating it or you've stated it, where somebody was charged with conspiracy, and then the charge was because he had been heard communicating with an unseen mm-hmm. person before the act. And mm-hmm. so the charge of conspiracy did not work because that spirit,
who are you conspiring
you cannot
with?
Conspire with a spirit. Okay. It must be a person and etc. So I can say without a shred of doubt that the Attorney General may bring a plethora of charges
mm-hmm.
which are inferred from the conduct, and it will be based strictly on evidence of what has transpired in the course of the betrothal.
Mm-hmm.
But not just the act itself. It may be the actions that transpired in the course of the betrothal that will lead to a number of crimes that have been committed, but not strictly speaking just by the mere betrothal.
Okay.
Otherwise, there would have been several prosecutions across the country, because if you go to most of the rural areas,
so many.
These things do happen. For example, sometimes you go and you conduct yourself in an exemplary manner to a particular chief or society or community, mm-hmm. and then they betroth a child to mm-hmm. you. That does not mean that the child is gifted to you. It is a kind of recognition of whatever you have done, so that the child is groomed when the child grows up, the child decides whether to marry you or not. It's not compulsory, remember. Because anything that has compulsion in it will be unlawful.
Will be unlawful.
Anyway.
Let's continue briefly before we go to the constituency. The Attorney General's Department always gets accused of engaging in witch hunting.
Yes.
Yesterday's conviction, there are NDC people who would think the AG's department went after Sedna Tamaklo because she's a member of the NDC. We've seen prosecutions against a sitting member, in fact, more than one sitting member of parliament on the NDC side. How do you reckon the Attorney General's Department can, you know, extricate itself from this accusation of witch hunting?
Well, by securing convictions in one of the ways is by securing convictions in the majority of the cases that are taken to court. Because if you take the cases to court and they are found to be hollow, found to be a microcosm of materials well carved to just implicate people who are innocent, persecutions and etc., that one people will take you on. But this case, that conviction was secured. Remember, I must state this without equivocation, that fortunately I was part of those who started the prosecution before I left office.
Okay.
You know, we finished
2019.
We put all the materials together. We started the matter before I actually left office. And I'm not surprised at all because by the facts that were before us, we're very certain beyond a shred of doubt that we're going to secure a conviction anyway. Because and we are not sub judice now because the judgment
has determined.
It's been determined and etc. You can, if you read the judgment and then the various charges that were actually preferred against Sedina and then the other person. In fact, if I were their lawyer at the beginning, I would have asked for us to go for plea bargain.
Or ask them to run away.
No, just plea bargain. Because it was very clear that they could not. It was very clear. If you look at some of the things, one of the charges in which, you gave out a loan to someone, even without discussing interest. And when the money got into the person's account, you mentioned interest. The person said, I'm no longer interested in the deal. Therefore, I'm sending back the money to you. The best way is to send it back to an account, isn't it? Government's account. But what happened? In that particular case, they said, okay, bring the money to Accra. They brought it in a sack. And at Bachona filling station, the money was loaded into a vehicle and driven away. How are you going to defend that?
It will be difficult.
This is a fact that I have stated. And it's now been proven. That's why I'm making that point.
Okay.
Again, you tell me, Maru, that you have an amount of money and you are going to do sensitization on certain communities across the country and the amount is 2 million. Then about 20,000 Ghana cedis of it is actually expended doing sensitization. The rest of it go into your pocket. You cannot account. Stealing, you so know.
Explaining becomes difficult.
It becomes very difficult. And then, Umaru, a phone that everybody knows is 100 Ghana cedis. You go and buy it at 400. Questions will be raised, causing financial loss and all that. So it was very, very clear. That is why, in the other matter, that it was also as clear as that, they pleaded guilty.
And
they took advantage of Section 35.
Yeah, you mean ACN?
Yes, ACN, and then also venture capital.
Yeah, he also did that.
He also did.
Okay.
So those ones were very clear and obvious.
Your colleague at the bar, Richard Sky, has sent a comment on the Bobu Ulomo marriage. He says that the whole essence of the word force there is to take care of the issue of the absence of consent when dealing with matters to do with a child. You are mistreating the law, he says. So he's essentially siding with the Children's Act, saying that there cannot be betrothal based on his reading of the Children's Act.
No, what I'm saying is that I think Richard should be, he should listen to me carefully. You see, a child cannot consent to be married. Because marriage is of a certain age, which is, in our law, if you are 16, you can actually marry. Because that is the age of consent for sex.
Yes.
You know, but what Richard is not actually understanding is that betrothal, strictly speaking, is not marriage. It is at a later date
when there is majority
that consummation takes place, that marriage then is talked about. But if you strictly construe betrothal to mean marriage, you get it wrong.
Okay.
We can argue this matter over and again
until
we promulgate specific laws to deal with the issues. I think the Children's Act contains provisions enough to protect children.
Okay.
But it is the application of or the use of or abuses in the course of the betrothal that would trigger crime specifically as we move on.
Dr. Tando is a Deputy Director General of the GES.
Yes.
He has sent a message.
My good friend.
Your friend, good. He says Section 14, again, of the Children's Act, right to refuse betrothal and marriage. 1. No person shall force a child to be A, betrothed, B, to be the subject of a dowry transaction, or C, to be married. section 14 subsection 2 says the minimum age of marriage of whatever kind shall be 18 years.
So that provision does not criminalize anything. It doesn't say that.
No, but it says that it's no person the, shall be forced,
force
to be betrothed.
Then it means that you didn't even understand me. From the beginning, I talked about it. I gave the exception.
Mm-hmm.
Where you talk about force,
mm-hmm.
when somebody is forced into an act, that is when I said crimes are triggered.
Mm-hmm.
A number of crimes will be triggered. But when the betrothal is willing, from both parents and all that,
mm-hmm.
and it's a willing process,
mm-hmm.
okay?
But even if it's a willing process,
look, even if
section
it's a
14, no person shall subject a child to torture or other cruel, inhuman, blah, blah, I don't think that's the part we need, including cultural practices which dehumanize or is injurious to the child. Subsection 2 says, no correction of a child. Okay, I think I've essentially read it from Dr. Tando over there.
Let
to be married. It starts from section 13. Protection from torture and degrading treatment, and it already talks about.
Look, Umaru, yes. All of them are dancing around. I have stated that as a country, if we have to enact legislation
specific
to say that we are going to exact penal consequences for betrothal, we should do so.
Very well.
We should be very express. All these things we are doing are just realms of conjecture.
Let the law be specific.
Well, we should be specific.
Very well. Let's move.
Defilement is a crime. Mm-hmm. We know what defilement is. Rape is a crime. We know what it is. If we want to say betrothal is a crime, we should say that whoever betroths a child, okay, to another person commits an offense and is liable on summary conviction to a fine or to imprisonment or to both.
So
we don't have that as we speak.
So put it in Act 29
that
and you
is
have
all.
A law.
We should be specific on okay. it and start
dancing
around.
We need to go. Why do you want to go back to represent the people of Timpani?
Well, very clear and obvious. I want to finish the unfinished business.
Oh, but that's what your mama is saying. You both said that he has nothing to finish.
No.
Why do you should be allowed to go and finish, but your mama should not be allowed.
Let me state without any shred of doubt.
Mm-hmm.
That every issue is dealt with in its own peculiar circumstances.
Okay.
Do you recall that in this studio, between myself and you,
mm-hmm.
you said that I talked about construction of roads and you said I had unleashed on the people dusty roads.
Mm-hmm.
That is true because that was the first step. The other step was to now do tarring of the roads,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because as I have stated, and the listeners are out there, since independence, there hasn't been any massive improvement of roads
mm-hmm.
in Timpani than it happened in my regime of 4 years. And I'm on a national platform saying this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now about 4 or 5 different contractors had most of the major roads under construction. And so one would want to actually ensure that he completes these projects. Electrification that I embarked upon, a number of communities that I embarked upon, over 40 of them, you know, I haven't been able to finish. You know, I had other plans for boreholes, schools, then we have health facilities and etc. Most of these things I could not actually finish. So I'm seeking the kind assistance of the constituents to bring me back so that I'll be able to complete these projects as it were. But remember that they have an opportunity. The opportunity is that PEMCA served them for 4 years. And then Madam Lydia has also served them for 4 years. They have an opportunity to compare the works of the two of us.
They should do boot for boot analysis.
That is, or they should just do a comparison of the two. I put out my projects and then the things I lobbied for the constituency in terms of development and jobs and that were created and etc. She puts out her own. And then it becomes then very easy for them to make a choice.
It's interesting. When you were MP, I think you were about the only MPP MP from the Upper East.
We're three.
Even and now it's reduced to one.
One.
Now MPP
at
has
the time,
only one.
Myself, certain. The late Kofi Adda, and then the Zebila MP, Honorable Fuseni
Adom. Now you have only one MPP MP from Upper East.
That is so.
Your party has served for 8 years. Are you not worried that the sins of the national government is going to affect you locally?
You know, everything, as you have rightly pointed out, is localized. And the people are going to be voting based on their own lives that they are actually living in the constituency before reflecting the national picture and etc. So they're going to look at the basic and fundamental things in their area. Are they able to afford food? Do they have potable water? Are their roads fairly okay? You know, what is their educational infrastructure like, and how is education in the area, the health facilities? And I tell you, this government under Nana in 4 years has done massive infrastructure in the Timpani constituency.
What if your competitor argues that his party is not in power and so she was an orphan and for that reason she could not do anything? Now she would ask the people, give my father John Mahama the nod, give me the nod, the two of us will be a better pair of hands than giving it to PEMCA, who you have already tested and seen.
But that is where you are going to get it all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That is why we are where we are.
Mm.
If I had been repeated, probably, and then repeated as a minister,
mm-hmm.
and my government won power for the 4 years that passed, I think that would have, the sky wouldn't have even been a limit. So for her to now go and make such statements would be most unfortunate. There are quite a number of sitting MPs from the minority side who are doing wonders in Parliament. If you are well connected and you know where to go to knock, the doors will be open. I know a number of
people. So your MP doesn't know route?
I will not be able to make pass judgment. It is for the people of Timpani to pass that judgment. I won't be able to pass judgment on her. It's for the people to pass judgment. But I can tell you that as an MP, what you need to do practically and basically is to ensure that at all times, you are well connected. Because when you go into national election, your prayer first is that you win and then your presidential candidate wins. Then you'll be able to do the massive development. If the reverse happens, you win and then your presidential candidate does not win, or your presidential candidate wins and you don't win, then the problems will begin there. But you have to know how to manage that to be able to navigate the circumstances and then bring development even in the absence of your president.
In your estimation, your MP is not well connected.
Well, as I said, I ran away from actually passing definite judgment on persons because I would normally leave that to the electorate to make a pronouncement.
If you won Timpani and Baumia lost the elections in 2025, how connected are you? Where are your connections? And how would that benefit the people
of Timpani? I would try to shelve it because if I make a disclosure, it will mean an admission of one thing or the other. We will not get to that bridge at all. So but in the unlikely event that we get to that bridge, I'll navigate it with excellence.
You are sure that you are the best person for the people of Timpani, whether or not MPP breaks the 8?
I am saying that I will pray 24 hours that I am in government.
That's John Mahama's slogan.
I am in government with my president. But in the unlikely event that it doesn't happen, I will navigate the process with excellence and still bring development to my people.
Honorable Joseph Kpenka, former Deputy AG, NPP Parliamentary Candidate Timpani, thank you for joining us for dinner on Point Blank.
Omar Sanda, I'm grateful. But mischief always detected. Stop.
Oh, you see, I promise you I will not be mischievous.
And you haven't been too mischievous today.
I've repented. Slowly, I will change. Before you realize, I'll become a saint.
You are forgiven. you know, very soon we are going to call you.
I thought you were going to say that you're going to betroth somebody.
We are going to call you to the bar by the grace of God in the near foreseeable future. And so we have to start training you now.
Okay, but can you give me a wife in Upper East too?
I can promise you that. I'll talk to my chief and I can promise you that.
Thank you very much. You are a very good man. God bless you.
I bless you too.
That's Honorable Joseph Kpenka, former Deputy AG, former MP for Timpani. My name is Umaru Sanda Amado. I did this with Hawa Idrisu Mustafa. Production by Kobna Welsin, Beverly London, and Sami Wiafe. Technical support from Daniel Squashy. New media support from Edwin Kwakufo. We'll return tomorrow at 17:30 GMT. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
City News, we speak first. Reach our hotline on 0302-224959 and get interactive on Facebook, City 97.3 FM, and on Twitter at City 973.